ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतंगमय ॐ शांति शांति शांति। लॉर्ड लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, लीड अस फ्रॉम इग्नोरेंस टू इल्यूमिनेशन, लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ to immortality. Om peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have been discussing spiritual progress according to the path of devotion, and I said the teaching of Sri Ramakrishna in this regard is very close to the teachings of Sri Ramanuja, a great teacher of devotion. And in this context, I also had mentioned, I was deeply impressed by a book written by a famous psychologist, Eric Fromm, The Art of Loving. Devotion is nothing but love collected, purified and directed towards God. All of us are potential lovers. Our goal in life is to develop this love. Infinite love is already within us, but it has got to be brought out. That needs a great discipline. And yoga means that way how we can manifest this potential love and direct it towards the higher reality, highest reality, which is God. Now the question may come, there have been so many books on spirituality, spiritual practice. Why do we need to refer to a psychologist who doesn't seem to be spiritual at all? One important fact we tend to forget. Whether we are worldly or spiritual, we have to deal only with one thing, that is our own mind. Both happiness and unhappiness, bondage and liberation, both lie within the mind. A person who is not successful in this world is sure to be a failure in spiritual life also. A person who is able to control the mind, he will be successful in both the worlds. So psychology, or the study of the mind, helps us a great deal in understanding the nature of our own mind and the defects and how to remedy them and how to use them to our own good. So this wonderful book, he calls it The Art of Loving. Loving is an art. What is an art? Art is that where we can perceive the finest things, the finerness of things. Usually our sight is on the gross reality. When a person develops a deeper insight, a finer feeling, that turns into art. Many artists, many people go by the name of the artists, as many people go by the name of scientists. You ask some people, what are you doing? I am a scientist. So what are you doing? I work in such and such a lab. Every fool who works in a lab is a scientist, is a technician. He has mastered certain techniques of doing certain things. To be a scientist is an attitude of mind, developing the mind so that it would be objective, rational, able to look at things in an objective way and trying to come to the conclusions, right hypothesis. Similarly, every artist who dabbles in painting or singing or writing or sculpting, then they may know the technique, but they may not be artists. I'll give an example. About 1 year or two back, I happened to go to Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, and a good musician came there, and there was also a festival when the students were exhibiting their these things, what they have learnt at Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, and I was asked to give my blessing. So what I listened for some time to what they were playing and singing and all that, I couldn't tolerate it. The pupils were singing nicely, the instrumentalists were playing nicely, but there is an absence of aesthetic sense, that finer sense. So I had to tell them that it is all right to learn to sing, all right learn to play, but most important thing in this art of music is to develop a fine aesthetic sense. What is that aesthetic sense? The singers, there was one boy whose voice was low and sweet, and he knows the technique. He was singing. And unfortunately, the person who was accompanying on tabla is a master, and he was banging away with his instrument. The whole hall was reverberating. Hardly anybody can hear this squeaky voice of that boy. He was playing rhythmically. This boy also was singing rhythmically and nicely according to the raga. But where is the proportion between this vocal and the instrumental thing? Which is more important? The instrumentalist is supposed to be the accompanist. He is an assistant. That is, in an ecstatic mood, he closed his eyes and banging away. The poor boy was trying to raise up his voice but could not. Where is the harmony there? Even though for so many years they had practiced that, they have become expert technicians, they know they can just close their eyes and play or sing. But where is the harmony? Where is the balance? Where is that fineness? So in the similar way, love or loving is an art. How does one become an artist? An art requires several things, but the most important thing is that aesthetic sense, bhava. In any music, for example, bhava, raga, laya and sahitya. These are the four most important ingredients. Bhava means aesthetic sense. Raga means a particular composition has to be sung in a particular way to evoke that particular type of mood. Laya is rhythm. Sahitya, the words also must be appropriate for the whole thing. When these four things become harmonious, it becomes a perfect piece of music. In this regard, I recall an incident from the life of Tansen. Tansen was supposed to be one of the greatest musicians. He was also the court musician of the Emperor Akbar. And nobody could rival him in his musical performance. One morning, Emperor Akbar went out to take a walk in the forest, and he heard a most divine voice coming out from the woods. He was surprised. He never heard such wonderful music in his whole life, not even Tansen, his best musician. So out of curiosity, in my kingdom and so near to my capital, such a fine musician is there and I am not aware of him at all. So he went, and to his shock, who was singing? Tansen. So Emperor Akbar waited till Tansen finished his singing, because Tansen was absorbed. He did not notice what was happening in front of him. When he opened his eyes, he saw his Barsha. Emperor became a little piquant, you know. He said, Tansen, you never sang to me like this. I never knew that you could sing like that. Why is it that you never sing to me like this? He said, Jahapana, Emperor, when I sing in front of you, I sing in front of an earthly emperor. So my voice is compressed. But here I am singing to the emperor of the whole universe. And therefore I am completely free. That fine aesthetic sense cannot come until one has devotion to God. No earthly devotion can ever bring about that fine aesthetic sense. Anything great, whether it is writing, reading, sculpting, all greatness comes from God. Or, to put it in other words, all greatness only when our activities are connected with God, they become great. No activity can become great until it is connected with God. True aesthetic sense comes only when our mind is directed towards God. Same thing applies in any art, art of loving too. So the first ingredient in the art, in any art, is to have this fine aesthetic sense, that fineness of feeling, the ability to feel the finer side of the things. Then comes knowledge. There must be a disciplined knowledge, should be. One must know. Without this knowledge, without any aesthetic sense, it is impossible to become an artist. Artist doesn't mean only a famous artist. Anybody can become an artist. People may not recognize your own small room. You can arrange it artistically. Your kitchen can be a beautiful place of art. Your cooking can be a beautiful art. Whatever we do can be a beautiful art. It doesn't need money. It is a sense of feeling the fineness, fine side of things. Swami Vivekananda used to say funny stories, you know. He called it food for thought. I think in the latest edition the title has changed. He used to tell a story. In a village, there was a small village and there was a small temple. Every Indian village usually has a small temple. And because the villagers don't go there often, only the pujari goes there. He does puja, worship in his own way. And since he has no other work after puja, sits in a corner of the temple, eating all the prasada himself, because there is nobody to give it to, and snores. And the pujari is also a very hefty fellow, because he has no other work to do. Usually the pujaris are very stout fellows. Anyway, one afternoon, the pujari finished his puja, and went and sat down in a corner and started snoring. In the village there was a fellow who, Chaubeji, Swamiji gave the name Chaubeji. Chaubeji, he thought he was the best musician in the whole world. So he wanted to sing something for God. So he came to the temple, sat nicely in front of the door of the temple and opened his mouth wide. And even I think several, even small lambs can enter into his mouth, so wide it was, and started singing. His words sing, his way of telling I'm singing, but it was actually more of a nuisance. Now this Chaubeji, the priest, he has developed the art of snoring to such an extent, nothing on this earth would disturb him. But this singing has immediately awoke him. So he shouted, "Hey, what are you doing?" "I am singing." "Stop your that stupid noise. You are disturbing my sleep." The man got very angry and said, "What? I am singing for God." The Chobe, the pujari, the priest said, "You see, you are disturbing my sleep. There is no rhythm, there is no feeling, there is no, there are no proper words. And what type of singing is that?" The man said, "What does it matter? After all, I am singing for God. He is only pleased with devotion." The priest said humbly, "Look here, I am a stupid person. Even I am not pleased with your singing. You think God is more foolish than me, that he will appreciate your singing?" Food for thought. So, every art requires tremendous amount of knowledge, dedication. Then, technique. There is a way of learning everything. Simply knowledge will not come by opening the book. This particular way of applying our mind to it is called technique. There is a technique, there are books, how to sing, how to write. Everything is, knowledge will not do. You may have all the ideas, but you must have the right technique. Then apply the seat of your pants, as they say. Go on doing it until you become perfect in it. So all these elements are needed there to develop any art. And the same thing applies to this art of loving. So according to the psychologist, which we will turn now, that he is not speaking of spirituality, but he is actually speaking only about spirituality. He did not use the words. I would read much from it. This is a condensed version, but you will be surprised, as I was, that it is nothing less than a spiritual discipline. First, the practice of art requires discipline, but it is that of a discipline in one's whole life. Underline that, whole life. The modern man is lazy outside his life. Without such discipline, however, life becomes shattered, chaotic, and lacks in concentration. So the first qualification needed is discipline. Are we not disciplined? We get up at a particular time and we eat breakfast, go to the office at a particular time, work 8 hours and then come back. Our whole life seems to be very disciplined. Is it? We are practicing discipline because we are forced to do it. It is not coming. How do we know? What do you do on Saturday morning? What discipline have you got on Saturday and Sunday morning? One of our devotees' daughter, she is a young girl of 14 or 15 in America. So I used to stay in her house sometime. But she used to get up exactly at 6:30 every day, excepting Saturdays and Sundays. She gets up at 9, half past 9, 10, half past 10. So I used to call it Aditi's Sunday Samadhi. Where is the discipline? Is a state of mind. Whether there is a holiday or working day, weekday or weekend, we must follow the same routine. That shows that we are doing things on our own, not forced to do it. Otherwise, every slave is a hard worker. But to leave him without supervision, I remember I was reading an African way of life. They used a lot of these Africans to lay down the railway tracks and other things, you know. These British supervisors used to be there. So as long as the supervisor is there, the slaves absolutely wonderfully valuable. The moment he turns his head away, they all drop everything where they are, lie down there wherever they are. But the poor supervisor, you know, he has to go to have lunch or some other things. So he said, what is the way to discipline these fellows? So he made a trick. He went under a bush and stood for some time. They were all watching him. And they knew he was watching them. That's why they were. So the officer thought, yes, now I have conditioned them. So slowly he went behind the bush, put his hat on a branch, and these fellows looked, the hat was looking. But they are clever fellows, they observed the hat was not moving at all. So one of them went nearby, saw this fellow's absent. Oh, immediately they laid themselves down. Discipline is a state of mind. Holy Mother used to say, once I fell sick, and she used to get up at 3 o'clock. And then, because she was sick, she got up late. And sickness was cured slowly. But after that, the discipline has gone away. So she started getting up at 5 o'clock, then 5:30, then 6 o'clock. One day she got up and said, my goodness, what is this? My mind is becoming lazier and lazier every day. Said, look here, mind. Now tomorrow morning, you will have to get up at 3 o'clock. And she said, the next day, what is discipline? Once we set our mind, this is what I want to achieve, and this is the way to achieve it, the mind will never turn into any other thought, not even unconsciously. One of the supreme examples of this discipline of life is Swami Adbhutananda, the disciple of Ramakrishna. All great people without exception have that discipline inborn, ingrained within them. But I bring, because you are familiar with the life of Sri Ramakrishna and his disciples, this Swami Adbhutananda, when he was young, he served Sri Ramakrishna. With this boy, he used to doze during the evening times, dusk. Sri Ramakrishna used to say dawn and dusk are the most important times of the day to think about God. But this boy used to doze away. Not that he was lazy. But you know, Sri Ramakrishna was a hard taskmaster. He used to make his disciples get up at 3 o'clock, sometimes even at midnight, make them meditate till morning, after that make them go on washing his clothes and prepare for him hookah and do this. A whole day he will keep them busy, and in the even dusk time he expects them to be sitting in meditation and then absorbed. How is it possible? So this boy is to doze. One day he was dozing. Sri Ramakrishna got very annoyed and said, "Have you come here only to sleep away your time? You are wasting your precious time. You should never sleep." At one sentence, one commandment from his guru, Swami Adbhutananda said, "In my life, I will never again sleep." He never used to sleep whole night. Daytime, he used to sleep for 2 or 3 hours. Of course, that was enough for him. Whole life he spent like that. Severe austerities he practiced. His body was shattered. When he was about to die, few days before his death, he fell severely sick. He was in Banaras at that time, Varanasi. And he used to make his attendants make him propped up against pillows because his body was so weak he could not even sit. They asked him, "Swami, why do you want to sit? You are a God-realized soul. You don't certainly need to sit and meditate. Even if you lie down, that is good enough meditation. Why do you do it?" He said, "It's my guru's commandment. Who the hell are you to say no?" So such a time came when he was absolutely unable to get up. So one evening he asked his attendants, "Please help me to sit." But doctor advised them, "The Swami should not sit, that will only worsen his disease." So the attendants were more conscious of Swami's health than his meditation. They refused point blank and said, "We are not going to help you to sit down." And he was not in a position to sit down by himself. He said, "Look here, this is my guru's words. I have to do so long as I am alive. If you don't help me, I will call on Hanuman." The attendant said, "Call on your Hanuman. We are not going to help you." And they went away. And after some time they came and were surprised to see that he was sitting in his usual position and meditating. They asked him, "How did you do it?" He said, "You know, I told you, I prayed to Lord Hanuman, he came and made me sit down and went away." Now the point is, was it necessary for him to sit down? We may think, where is the need for such extreme measure? After all, he achieved what he wanted to achieve. After that, where was the need? That is not the point. The point was, he told his mind, "This is my guru's, your guru's words, you must obey it as long as you breathe, as long as you are conscious." And he never gave that up. In every one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, we see this, whatever their master told them, they obeyed implicitly. Funny things also happen, which I will not go into it. So, discipline is the very first thing. Have we got that discipline? What is the cause of our failure in many things of life? We do when we feel like doing it. When our mind says, "Well, you have nothing else to do, meditate now." But if we have lot of other things, we give a skip to meditation and to God and everything. Discipline in any art, not only in the art of loving, any art, discipline is an absolute must. I remember a world famous piano player. He used to practice every day, 8 to 12 hours. Whether there is a program or not, he used to play. And some people asked him, "Sir, you are a master. Why do you do this? Why do you need to practice every day?" And his famous reply was, "Look here, if I stop practicing for a day, I notice the difference in my playing. If I stop practicing for 2 days, my critics will notice the difference. If I stop practicing for 3 days, the whole world notices the difference." I used to do it. It's not that, you see, why is it that we do not practice discipline? Psychologically we have associated it with painfulness. Discipline is a very painful thing. until and unless it becomes agreeable, we do not want to do it. Well, if it is agreeable, the whole world would have gone to God by now. Discipline is always painful in the beginning, but that is the only way to become great or to achieve anything. There is no other way. Second, concentration is a necessary condition for the mastery of any art. Yet, even more than self-discipline, concentration is rare in our culture. On the contrary, our culture leads to an unconcentrated and diffused mode of life, hardly paralleled anywhere else. You do many things at once. You read, listen to the radio, talk, smoke, eat, drink. You are the consumer with the open mouth, eager and ready to swallow everything, pictures, liquor, knowledge, anything, God Himself. This lack of concentration is clearly shown in our difficulty in being alone with ourselves. To sit still without talking, smoking, reading, drinking is impossible for most people. What is concentration? He gives an interesting definition. The ability to be alone and to be joyful. The most horrible punishment, you know, solitary confinement. Yes, even death is more welcome than that. But to be, you are provided everything, and yet you are not given anything to be with. No books, no radio, much less any people. Whole day will be staring at you. And what is still more worst punishment than the solitary confinement, you know, Russians have discovered it. There will be a leaky tap in a corner. You can't reach it. You get somewhere up. Drip, drip, drip. And then after some time you go mad. Because you are always, this is disturbing. Oh, it is disturbing. Oh, it is disturbing. Until you accustom yourself that it is a wonderful thing. Because when we are busy, we don't notice many things. But when we are alone, we notice many things. Even the smallest changes, noises, we notice instantaneously. And they get on our nerves. I remember an interesting incident. A devotee, woman devotee, came to me when I was in Bangalore. And she read somewhere that she should always repeat the name of God, do japa. She also read a suggestion in the book that, you know, your alarm clock will be ticking. Convert the ticking into a repetition of the name of God. Imagine that the ticking is the sound of Rama, Rama. Instead of tick, tick, imagine it is Rama, Rama, Rama. And for the first day she was very happy. So Swamiji, all the time I was able to remember Ram Naam. Next day it became a bugbear. He says, you know, I can't sleep. The moment I want to sleep, Rama. Every second. And you know, she was so disturbed, she was unable to sleep. She came to me running, oh, I can't do without sleeping, and this horrible clock I have habituated myself. No, it is, previously, she was, the same clock was there, but she was not doing anything. It was ticking, she was sleeping. But now she associated with a sound and listening to it. Now that tick became a big thunder in her head. I said, you see, very simple thing. Just first of all, remove that alarm clock and throw it away, put it somewhere else. Then for a few days, take some sleeping tablets and have a good sleep. Then your this conditioned association will disappear. Then bring back your alarm clock. Never do this thing until your mind becomes so pure that it becomes a joy to hear God's name. If you go on hearing God's name for a few minutes, it is very pleasant. After that, it becomes a terrible thing. So don't attempt it. So concentration. What is the concentration? That is our ability in being alone with ourselves. To sit still without talking, smoking, reading, drinking or doing anything else. That shows that we have concentration, developed the ability of concentration. To be able to enjoy one's own company, that is concentration. How does it come? If the mind is restless, it won't come. If the mind is pitched to something higher, holier, sacred, Only then concentration is possible. To be alone is a joy. Till such time it's not possible. And interestingly, you know the five teachings of Sri Ramakrishna. Five commandments I call it. Always sing the name and glories of God. Start with morning and evening, slowly increase it. That's the first commandment. Second, cultivate holy company, satsanga. After that only Sri Ramakrishna prescribes this nirjanavasa, to go to a solitary place, to be alone and to be thinking of God seriously. After that only Sri Ramakrishna prescribes this nirjanavasa, to be alone and to be thinking of God seriously. Don't do it in the beginning. Do it after a long time when you practice taking the name of God and cultivating holy company. You taste the name of God. It gives you joy. Then if you go to solitary places, it will help you develop your devotion. Otherwise, you will go mad. People will go mad if they are in solitary places. Or they grow pumpkins. You know the story? One of our swamis, he was a very active person. He used to work 12-14 hours every day. He was working in a school. After many years, he got disgusted and said, "What is this? Am I a donkey? But all the time I have to work. I am a sadhu. I am a monk. I must go and perform tapasya." So headquarters were very considerate, fair enough. Take 6 months off, go and spend time. So he went for 6 months and came back. And his brother monks asked, "Who did your tapasya, austerity, go?" He said, "Wonderful." "What do you mean by wonderful?" "I could grow such big pumpkins." "What is this? You went to perform austerities and how come you grow such big pumpkins?" He said, "You see, I was never accustomed to think of God all the time. So morning 2 hours, evening 2 hours, fair enough. But what do I do rest of the 22 hours? So I collected some pumpkin seeds and planted them in front of my hut, and every day 100 times went on seeing there with such meticulous care, because he was accustomed to so much of activity. So much care you are taking of those plants. What else will they do? What choice have they got except in yielding big pumpkins?" It's not easy to be alone. One can go. Try. That's why for us solitary monks, come here as a day retreat. Incidentally, we have on 29th of April here a day retreat. You see, spend the time in the company of people for some time, meditation, then singing, a little singing, then talks, then spend a little conversation. That is how accustom yourself to be away from your familiar surroundings, so that slowly you uplift your mind. We have to do it gradually. There is no way to grow all of a sudden. So concentration is a necessary condition for the mastery of an art. A great scientist, great musician, greatness in anything requires after discipline. What will you do after discipline? Discipline gives you tremendous amount of time and energy and opportunity. But what are you going to do with that? The advantage of discipline is it will save you a lot of time. An indisciplined person has no time for anything because he is so chaotic. But what will you do with the available energy? If you do not know, it will become a devil, demon, and haunt you. A third factor is patience. For a modern man, patience is as difficult to practice as discipline and concentration. Our whole industrial system fosters exactly the opposite, quickness. All our machines are designed for quickness. What is good for machines, so goes the logic, must be good for man. Modern man thinks he loses something, time, when he doesn't do things quickly. Yet he doesn't know what to do with the time he gains except to kill it. We manufacture a thousands of things to distract us, because time is available and we have to kill it. Now there's an interesting story. How much of patience is necessary? Without patience is not waiting with blood pressure in. Patience is waiting with relaxed mood. Do the best, but don't be anxious about it. There is a story. There was a famous Zen master of archery. And there was a young man, he wanted to also learn the art of archery. It is an art. It is not simply shooting some arrows. And he had some responsibilities. I think he had to look after his parents. So he was in a bit of hurry. So he came to the master and said, "Master, I want to be your disciple." "Fair enough, we'll start from tomorrow." Then slowly the question came, "Supposing I work very hard, how many years will it take to become a master?" The master said, "Yes, if you work really hard, it will take about 10 years. The young man said, "Supposing I work double shift, how much time will it take?" The master said, "If you work double shift, I think it will take about 30 years. And they said, "Suppose I work day and night, how long will it take?" "I'm sure it will not be less than 70 years. It boggles us that a man who is working more and more amount of time, he should be able to master it. Mastery doesn't come because you work double shift. Mastery comes when the mind is concentrated, disciplined, relaxed and all that. Then only the mastery will come. So, modern man thinks he loses something, time, when he doesn't do things quickly, yet he doesn't know what to do with the time he gains except kill it. 4. Eventually, a condition of learning any art is a supreme concern with the mastery of the art. A supreme concern. That must be the only important thing in our life. Otherwise it will not come. Sri Ramakrishna in his gospel used to give a wonderful example. His Dronacharya was teaching both Pandavas and Kauravas the art of archery, how to become masters of archery. And he had taught all that he knew. Then an examination day was fixed. Who is the best archer among all these people? So this Duryodhana and his brothers, here Yudhishthira and his brothers, Arjuna also was there. So the test, what was the test? That this Dronacharya, the teacher, tied a bird at the top of a tree, and the eye of that bird has to be pierced with the arrow. So he called Duryodhana. Duryodhana was the famed prince at that time. He was ruling. So he called, "What do you see?" "Oh, I see the tree, I see the branches, I see the bird, everything. Get out. You have failed in the examination." Everybody was telling, "I see this and that and the other things, everything." He did not even proceed with the examination. He said, "You have failed. Out." All the Pandava brothers were out, excepting Arjuna. Last came Arjuna. "Arjuna, do you see me?" "No, sir." "Do you see the tree?" "No, sir." "Do you see the branch?" "No, sir." "Do you see the bird?" "No, sir." "What do you see?" "I see only the eye of the bird." He said, "You don't need to do anything. You have passed the examination." That perfectness. Our Swami Adishwananda was telling an example. There is a famous baseball player in America. I'm not interested in the game, so I don't remember the names at all. He used to say, this man was interviewed by somebody because he was the best baseball player in the whole world. He was asked, when the baseball is thrown at you, when you are about to strike it with your bat, what do you see? And the man said, "I see only the baseball." And then he explained, not only he saw the baseball, but he saw it as big as a double football. You know, in the baseball, there will be some stripes, and there will be some company name who manufactured that baseball. And the ball is of this size. From that distance, how many of us will be able to notice even the stripes, even when it is still, and when it is coming at 150 miles to speed after being thrown? What do you see there? Most of us, we don't see anything. But this man, not only he sees the stripes and the letters, he sees the ball in such a big way. How is it possible? Because his whole mind is concentrated on the ball. He has forgotten the whole world, including his bat. He saw only that one. An interesting example was there, you know. Swami Vivekananda was in America. he went for a summer holiday to Ridgely Manor, and there is a golf course. Interestingly, a few months back I went and visited that golf course where this incident had taken place. Swamiji had never seen a golf game before. So he went out for a walk and he saw the son of his host was having this golf bat, golf stick or bat, whatever, and he was playing with this. Swamiji asked, "What is this game?" And he said, "It's called golf. What do you have to do?" "See, there are some holes here and there, and this you have to strike it in such a way that this ball goes and falls into the hole, and the number of strokes necessary to put, the less number, the better is the person." Okay? So Swamiji asked, "And how many times do you think you have to strike before you can put this ball into that hole?" The boy said, "At least 30 to 40 times." "What? 30 to 40 times? The hole is only here. It is almost about 100 feet or 200 feet. The boy said, "Sir, even experts who can do it in 4 or 5 strikes, they need even that. But I am only a small boy. I can't do much less than this." And meanwhile, then Swami, "Suppose I put this ball into that hole with one stroke. What will you give me?" The boy said, "I have half a dollar, I will give you. Bet." Meanwhile, the father of that boy came and he heard this conversation. He said, "Swami, it is impossible. Even the most expert, he cannot put in less than 4 or 5 strikes. And you, this is the first time you are seeing the course. It is impossible." Swamiji asked, "What will you bet?" "I will give you $10. Swamiji said, "Done." And then he took this golf stick and looked at the hole and gave one blow. Straight the ball went and landed in the hole. And the boy started shouting, "I lost daddy half a dollar." The man started shouting, "Swami, this is not fair. You used your yoga power, yogic power to put this ball." And Swami said, "No, I did not use any yogic power, no miraculous power, just ordinary this thing. How could you do it?" Swami laughed and said, "Look here, I told my mind, oh mind, do you want $10.5 or not?" Mind said, "Yes." "Then you have to put this ball into that hole." And that's it, done. In a way of speaking, it is also yoga. Yoga means what? Concentration of the mind. Swamiji concentrated and said, "This ball must go." He just let everything go. His whole, this mind gave command to the muscles, muscles gave command to the hands, and it went exactly what force is necessary, what direction is necessary, it went and landed. This is not a stray incident in the life of Swami Vivekananda. Like this, many other incidents happen, which I am not going to quote here. So, eventually, condition of learning, any art is a supreme concern with the mastery of the heart. They should not think of anything else until they reach the goal. Sri Ramakrishna was practicing sadhana and he wanted his mind to be completely concentrated. So he said to his mind, "Look on the edge of the temples, parapet of the temple, there is this still Bhairava. Oh mind, you must be like that if you want to achieve anything." Day or night, Ramakrishna was thinking nothing else, but only one thing, how to realize God. How much this psychological desire has taken a concrete shape. There is an incident in his own life. One day he was sitting under a tree trying to meditate. Suddenly he saw a young Paramahamsa, or a monk, coming out of his body with a trident. And this young monk pointed the trident at Sri Ramakrishna and said, "If you think of anything else excepting the Divine Mother, I am going to pierce you with this trident." Who was that young monk? It did not materialize from the sky. It was his own mind telling, "Since you want to realize God, you should not think of anything else. You must completely devote yourself to it. That must be the most important thing in your life, of supreme concern in your life." So these are the 4 important conditions. There must be discipline, there must be concentration, there must be patience, and There must be supreme concern, which Sri Ramakrishna used to call yearning, intense yearning, vyakulata. Some of us call it, Sri Ramakrishna's teaching is vyakulata yoga. There is a bhakti yoga, karma yoga, raja yoga, jnana yoga. There is a vyakulata yoga. If you have vyakulata, then you have achieved everything. Going back to Swami Vivekananda's talks on bhakti yoga, what are the qualifications necessary in order to succeed in this path of devotion? Purity, first qualification. A real thirst for knowledge, second qualification. Perseverance, third qualification. These are the qualifications which the psychologist is telling here. Concentration and discipline. That is what is called purity. A real thirst. This must be the supreme concern in life. Perseverance. This is what this man is telling. Patience. What else? He has not used spiritual words, but he is talking about only spirituality. Then comes a most wonderful observation. One does not begin to learn an art directly, but indirectly as it were. Very strange thing. People want happiness, isn't it? Is there anybody who says, I don't want happiness? Every one of us want to be happiness. Where will you get it? Go to the supermarket, Tesco's, Marks and Spencer's, we want half a bottle of happiness. Can you get it? Happiness is not available anywhere. Neither is it at home, neither it is in God. It is an indirect thing. You do something and it comes by itself. You fulfill the conditions, it will come by itself. You cannot purchase it directly. One does not begin to learn an art directly, but indirectly as it were. One must learn a great number of other and often seemingly disconnected things before one starts with the art itself. An apprentice in carpenter, for example, begins by how to plane wood. I remember a story with how one can become a master, a Zen master. And a disciple came to him. I want to become your disciple. He said, yes, fine. From tomorrow morning, our training will start. Next day morning, the disciple was present, all enthusiastic, waiting for some spiritual mantras to be given to him. The guru said, come here. Took him to a hillock and showed him a big rock and asked him, go on showing it until it reaches the top of the hill. And the man thought, why is my master? I came here for spirituality and this man is asking me to shove a rock to the top of the hill. Anyway, there may be something in it. So, the whole day he worked and somehow pushed it to the top of the hillock. And in the evening, the master was out for a walk, very leisurely, looking here and there. He reached the top, gave a kick, and the rock had fallen down to where it was. He said, next day morning, he started again. And the man went on pushing it towards the sunset. Again he succeeded in putting it on the top. The master came happily, smiling, happily, gave another kick and fell down. Several days it went on like this. The disciple got very annoyed and said, what is the meaning of it? You asked me to it. I take so much of trouble in pushing it up the rock and you just casually come and then give a kick and ask me to do it again. What is the point in it? The master said, get out of this place. You will never become my disciple. Disciple asked him, tell me, explain to me, what is the purpose? He said, the purpose is, never question what I ask you to do. Do exactly what I ask you to do. Don't seek a meaning. Only when you have achieved that condition, the teaching will begin, not otherwise. There is an incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. He had a disciple, a very tender type of man, Swami Yogananda. And this Yogananda could not harm even a mosquito. But that was a fine thing to be very tender. But sometimes this tenderness may lead to a lot of problems. In fact, many of us have this tendency of tenderness at the wrong place at the wrong time. For example, you want to do something important, say meditation or reading something important. A friend of yours phones, oh, I would like to see you at that particular time when you are about to do that. What is, oh my friend, how can I say no to him? But you know, inside you are getting annoyed, this stupid fellow has to, you know, fix this particular time to come here. But you know, you have not the heart to say no. But until you learn to say no, you are never going to be anywhere. You will be exactly where you are. See, this is a wrong. You be tender at other times, when you have time, when you can enjoy it. But when important things are to be done, you must have remove this tenderness and throw it out and say, no, I'm sorry, I'm busy at this time, come some other time, I'll be happy to see you. Many of us suffer because of this, because we are not happy when the person comes, and we are not happy to say no. We must have that ability to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't see you. Is it not a problem in our lives? Many good things we lose because of this stupid quality called tenderness. So this disciple, he had that tenderness. So Ramakrishna wanted to show him how to use the tenderness at the proper time, not at the wrong time. So one day, Sri Ramakrishna was found to be, there are a lot of bed bugs there, cockroaches. And he called the disciple and said, take this out and kill them and then come back. The disciple took them out but thought, you know, Sri Ramakrishna is not watching. I don't want to kill these poor creatures. Left them there and came back. But Sri Ramakrishna was the supreme master. He knows how our minds work. So as soon as he came the first time, have you killed them? He said, no sir. He didn't expect Sri Ramakrishna to ask that question. Sri Ramakrishna became very angry and said, if you start disobeying me in these small matters, tomorrow you will also disobey me in serious matters. It is not the question of killing the bugs. It is the question of unquestioning obedience. That is the quality necessary. So, we have to learn how to become an instrument through other things. So, as soon as you go to Sri Ramakrishna, he will not tell you that, you know, take this mantra and sit down and meditate. He may tell you to dress vegetables, or he may tell you to do something else. Another interesting incident. Respectable ladies, lady devotees used to come to meet Sri Ramakrishna. And he used to tell them, they never go out into the market. Conditions in India in those days were such, any woman from a lady from a respectable family would not be seen outside her house without her husband or with complete covering of the head and etc. But these people used to come to see Sri Ramakrishna. So, he used to say, go to the market and purchase things for me and come back. And they used to go and do that. Why was he doing it? Was he deliberately shaming them? No. You see, this thing called modesty or the inability to go out public, always to be dependent upon husbands or sons or somebody to escort them. This is a great obstacle. Tomorrow if they want to go to a temple, they have great desire. But there is nobody to escort them. They will miss that wonderful event because of this stupid modesty. Sri Ramakrishna wanted to break it. Not break the modesty, but break that tendency of dependency upon other people. That's why deliberately he used to ask people to do things which they are not accustomed to do. Swami Vivekananda is a very hard master. In America, in those days, smoking is considered as a bad habit, and especially women never smoke. Maybe few secretly, but never in public. But no man is allowed to smoke in the presence of a lady. Swami Vivekananda, not only he takes out his pipe in the presence of ladies, deliberately used to blow the smoke into their faces. They used to get shocked. Swami, what are you doing? What am I doing? Enjoy. I am enjoying the smoke. You also enjoy it a little. He is breaking some stupid notions. He is not insulting them. He is not saying it is a good habit. His purpose is to break certain ingrained bad habits which go in the name of some of these good customs and other things. So, if one wants to become a master in any art, one's whole life must be devoted to it or at least related to it. One's own person becomes an instrument in the practice of the art and must be kept fit. according to the specific functions it has to fulfill. With regard to the art of loving, this means that anyone who aspires to become a master in this art must begin by practicing discipline, concentration and patience throughout every phase of his life. To get up at a regular hour, to devote a regular amount of time during the day to activities such as meditating, reading, listening to music, walking, not to indulge, at least not beyond a certain minimum, in escapist activities like mystery stories and movies, not to overeat or overdrink, are some obvious and rudimentary rules. I will repeat it. To get up at a regular hour, to devote a regular amount of time during the day to activities such as meditating, reading, listening to music, walking, not to indulge, at least not beyond a certain minimum, in escapist activities like mystery stories and movies, not to overeat or overdrink, are some obvious and rudimentary rules, only rudimentary rules. These are the preparations for progressing in any art, to master any art, what to speak of spirituality. We do whatever we like and then we want to become great bhaktas. Mind is scattered. We wonder, why is God so cruel that he doesn't give me concentration of mind? Whole day we spend on whatever we like, and only meditation time we must be in samadhi, instantaneous samadhi. It's impossible. What a beautiful analysis this man is giving. There are certain other things which are very, very important, which we shall discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.